2XX Behind the Lines. We're speaking with Will Tuttle, who will be joining us at the Canberra Club on the 12th of February at 6:30 p.m. for a talk about his book, The World Peace Diet. And to go to that, there are $10 concessions and $18 at the door. And you can book online at Try Booking. And for more information, visit Will Tuttle Tour. That's www.willtuttletour.org.au. Will Tuttle.
Hi.
Hi, how you going?
I'm going great, thanks. Good to be with you, Clinton.
Fantastic. So your book, The World Peace Diet, it talks about how people's food choices are determined by mindset and worldview. And generally, people's mindset and worldview today are predominantly afflicted with a decreased empathy with each other, other species and the planet. There's a struggle between the fact of community, that process of cooperative interconnectedness, versus the myth of the individual, that competitive, predatory separateness of objects. Will, can you please talk to us about that struggle between the fact of community, the myth of the individual, in relation to mindset, worldview, and food choices?
Yes, Clayton, thank you. That's a great question and goes right to the heart of the problem, I think. And as I discuss in the World Peace Diet, actually the underlying driving fury that promotes the mentality that you're talking about of hard-heartedness into us individuals is the cultural program of our meals, of routinely eating animal-sourced food. And this is the invisible and, I think, in many ways, taboo core of our society. It's taboo to really talk about it. So I think one of the most important things anyone can do in terms of healing this wound that we all suffer from in our society, the wound of seeing ourselves essentially separate, of seeing our existence as a competitive struggle to get enough for ourselves against others and so forth, is to move toward a plant-based diet for ethical reasons, because the underlying violence, the routine massive amount of violence towards animals for food, creates within us a mentality, really, that's not only devastating to these poor animals, pigs, cows, chickens, turkeys, ducks, geese, fishes, and other animals that we kill routinely for food, but it's also devastating to our ecosystems and to our culture and really to ourselves, to our own physical health. So I think in many ways to our psychological and emotional health as well, because essentially we're forced to participate in mealtime rituals that in many ways bring out the worst in us. You know, they're rituals where we learn from the time we're little kids to look at beings not as beings, but as mere commodities, mere things to be used, to be abused however we want. And my research has shown that it's really a short, small step from treating non-human animals as mere commodities and objects to be used, to treating each other that way, and eventually, ironically, to treating ourselves that way. I mean, we all have to basically sell ourselves on the market to make money, and this whole reductionism, and it's really, in many ways, a devastation to our natural self-confidence, the natural sense we have of solidarity with each other, with our, with the other members of our species, with the earth. And I think if we're going to survive on this earth and thrive and really live our lives on this beautiful earth the way we could, and I think we really should, then we have to question the massive routine violence that's ongoing and that's hidden and covered up in our society, which is killing millions of animals every day for meat, dairy products, and eggs. And this seems like it would be a relatively easy thing to do, but the fact is that since the program is so powerful and it's injected into us by the people we trust the most, like our own mothers and fathers and our, the government, the teachers, the religious establishment, every institution in our society essentially is built on and supports advocates and actually requires us as little kids from infancy on to adopt this mentality of disconnectedness and of predation of exclusion, this sort of exclusive mentality that we don't care about other living beings outside of this particular in-group, this desensitization, the crushing of our natural compassion, domination of the sacred feminine dimension of human consciousness, which naturally yearns to love and protect life, the beautiful capacity that women, of course, obviously mothers have naturally for their babies. But I think all human beings, whether we're men or women, cross-culturally, we see this, the sacred feminine within all of us is revered as the feminine wisdom that understands the interconnectedness of all life. But we're raised in a society where we're killing millions of animals. Every meal, basically, is a ritualized educational experience designed to reduce our compassion, to numb us, to desensitize us, to disconnect us from our natural wisdom and compassion, and to subvert the sacred feminine power within ourselves and within our society. And then finally, when this happens, what we see is that not only are we as individuals disempowered profoundly and reduced, and we're seen merely as consumers, and that happiness comes from buying things, which causes enormous devastation psychologically and spiritually to us and to the earth and to animals, future generations and hungry people and the whole interconnected web of life. But it also creates the possibility for a tiny minority of powerful, wealthy people to control everyone. They control the war machine, the food machine, the drug machine, the medical machine. The whole thing is interconnected and devastates the health of ecosystems and of our own bodies' ecosystems as well, and of our societies. So it's absolutely essential for us as human beings to wake up from this program that's been injected into us and to reconnect with the natural wisdom and compassion that are our true nature. And the most powerful way to do this is to move toward a plant-based diet out of compassion and a sense of justice for our non-human animals and for other human beings and for ourselves. And it's very positive, I think, to do this. And I just want to encourage everyone to make an effort to understand the ramifications of our routine mistreatment of animals for food and other products. Thank you so much, Clayton. Great question.
And Will, there are forms of denialism. The tobacco industry denied the health impacts of smoking tobacco. And now there's denialism around climate change and ecosystem collapse. And there's also a denialism of the ethical, health and ecological impacts of animal-based agriculture and diet. And this denialism extends to individuals and organizations that otherwise think and act ethically and ecologically. There seems to be an incomplete intelligence to acknowledge the clear data and connections between ethics, health and ecology and food choices. Could you talk to us about intelligence, making those connections, and the thinking of Pythagoras, Leonardo da Vinci, and Albert Einstein?
Wow. Yeah, you know, those three gentlemen you just mentioned are really considered probably the three greatest geniuses in Western civilization. And one of the things I think that's really important to recognize is that these three towering geniuses all agreed that moving to a plant-based diet for ethical reasons is the most powerful thing anyone can do to awaken their own intelligence and to create a world where peace and justice and freedom are actually possible. We have Pythagoras, at the dawn of Western civilization, not only inventing the whole Western musical system and geometry and mathematics and many other foundational things, but also saying that as long as men kill animals for food, we will have wars. And we have the same thing being said by Leonardo da Vinci, and that in the future, people will look at the murder of animals the way we now look upon the murder of other human beings. And we have Albert Einstein saying that nothing will benefit humanity more than moving toward a vegetarian diet. And of course, I think he would say a vegan diet of compassion. What underlies that is what you're saying exactly, that basically these people were able to question the underlying assumptions of their society. And that's what we all have to do. I think that's how we bring out in ourselves the basic genius that we all have within us, the capacity to be creative and not to believe or engage in the denialism that you're referring to, which is really true. I mean, this massive denialism that comes from two sides. Basically, number one, we have the denialism of corporations, the whole animal agriculture industry that wants to basically tell us that killing animals, mutilating their bodies and stealing their babies and raping them on rape racks and all these horrible, cruel, violent things we're doing to them by the millions every day, that somehow that's not a problem, which is utterly absurd. It's devastating to these poor animals and also to our own wisdom and compassion. But then there's also the denialism of consumers who have been programmed and forced into eating meat, dairy products, and eggs, and who also engage in denialism because we don't want to also think that we're bad people, you know. And that's really the point here, is that I'm not in any way blaming anyone. I think the only reason anyone eats meat, dairy products, and eggs is because they're just following orders. We're following the orders that we got practically from infancy from our parents and institutions. So we're just doing programmed robotic behavior. And the denialism is basically part of the program. The program is to eat meat and dairy and eggs, and there's all these rationalizations that are injected along with that program to keep us not thinking, to keep us disconnected from our natural brilliance and beauty and wisdom and compassion, and become dull and violent and cruel and disconnected. So any one of us can somehow wake up out of this denialism. And when we do that, we create a field of healing for ourselves and for others. And I think it's, again, the most important thing anyone can do in our society today. Thank you for that great question.
I'm just wondering if you could add anything about eating soil, water, and fossil fuels to that.
You know, animal agriculture is enormously inefficient. It's probably the most wasteful thing you could ever invent. It takes enormous amounts of soil, water, and fossil fuels to make the meat, dairy products, and eggs that we so casually consume, cutting down rainforests, overfishing the oceans. We're talking 20 or 30 times as much resources for a person eating a standard, typical Western diet as compared to someone eating a vegan diet. So if we want to reduce our environmental footprint, there's nothing more benevolent we can do than to move for a plant-based diet, and that's on every level, including global climate change, which we see is becoming more and more aggressive because we're attacking the earth so violently by eating animal foods and destroying the natural balances here, and we're not going to be able to survive if we continue this behavior much longer.
Corporate interest and the profit motive operating within the chaotic human ecosystem of capitalism drive and control our education, media, and government organizations. And those organizations largely determine what we are taught, told, and do. Ecosystems, social systems, the economic system, the health of humans and non-humans are in a state of accelerating catastrophe and collapse. And to realize a world peace diet in this emergency, we seem to need a revolutionary transformation of our values, organizations, and human ecosystem to urgently confront this emergency that is a convergence of these catastrophes precipitated by compassionless, commodifying capitalist relations between humans, non-humans, and the planet. Will Tuttle, what could a vegan eco-socialist revolution look and feel like?
Yeah, I like your questions. You know, that's a huge question. I don't think anyone knows for sure how it's all going to play out. We don't know. But basically what we're looking at essentially is individuals like you and me and our, you know, everyone who's listening, each one of us can understand these ideas. They're not complicated. It's very basic. It's easy to understand. It will be much healthier and happier if we are less cruel and violent to animals and to our ecosystems and to our society, the hungry people and so forth. We can feed everyone on a fraction of the land that we're using now. And that's a key important point in this whole thing. So as people make an effort to understand this, they move toward a more plant-based diet for themselves, they understand this and share these ideas with other people, then they will be buying less meat, fish, dairy products, and eggs. And so we won't need to be killing so many animals. So when we reduce the amount of animals we need to kill, we can reduce the number of animals we need to feed. And so we can reduce the amount of land that's needed to grow genetically engineered, very often corn and soybeans and alfalfa and other feed grains and legumes to fatten up these poor animals. And so that can allow forests to come back and rivers to come back. It can allow the oceans to come back, because most of the fish that we're catching, we're devastating the oceans. And a lot of the fish we're catching are fed to animals to fatten them up and to make them give more milk and more eggs. So we can stop the attack on the oceans. We can learn to do a kind of agriculture, which already we understand, but this is really the cutting edge, I think. We can grow huge amounts of food on a fraction of the land that we're using. If we just eat grains and vegetables and fruits directly, we can feed people on a much less land. We do not need to use animal inputs. We do not need to use blood meal, bone meal, and manure and all this kind of stuff to build up the soil. We can do that with compost and with plant-based agriculture. So the future basically is people waking up, moving toward a plant-based diet, demanding organic, vegan, unprocessed foods, growing their own gardens, creating community-supported agriculture, and moving toward veganic gardening where we're not using any animal inputs at all. We'll be much healthier, much more vibrant. We can allow the wilderness and the forests and the oceans to return to much greater health. We can easily feed everyone on this planet, and we don't have to worry about that. And we can actually not only be healthier, but we can allow wildlife to come back. Right now, we're losing, according to biologists, somewhere between 50 and 200 species every single day are going extinct because of human activities. We're throwing the whole climate system into out of kilter. So when we look at this, we'll see that it's absolutely essential that we make these changes immediately. There's a real sense of urgency, I think, that's natural and healthy that we should understand, and that as we do this, we'll be giving the healing remedy and making the healing actions that are required of us at this time. Most important thing, really, again, is to make an effort to understand these ideas and to question the official stories that keep coming out, usually from our own consciousness, you know, that we somehow need to eat meat to be healthy or any of these things. I've been a vegan for 34 years, and I haven't been to a doctor, in that whole time. My wife is the same way, and this we're not unusual. I mean, vegans in general are much healthier than the general population. So it's not something where you're going to be less healthy. We will be just as healthy and probably a lot more healthy eating a plant-based diet. I just hope people can make an effort to understand these things. And I'd like to invite people to come to the lecture that we'll be giving in Canberra on Wednesday, February 12th.
That's at 6:30 p.m. at the Canberra Club here in Civic in Canberra. And that's for $10 concession and $18 at the door. And you can get more information at www.willtuttletour.org.au. And you can book online at Try Booking. Will Tuttle, author of The World Peace Diet, thanks very much for talking to 2XX Behind the Lines.
Oh, it's been great, actually. I really appreciate your questions. And I also just want to mention just quickly here that I was told it's okay to mention this, that we have a couple of free, totally free tickets available. If you'd like to be the first one to get them, just send an email to contact@willtuttletour.org.au, the same website you said. And, we have those two free tickets. So if anyone wants to get them and come or give them to a friend, we also have that. But thank you so much, and I really want to thank all the listeners also for doing what you can to help make a better world.
Great stuff. See you on February the 12th at 6:30 p.m. at the Canberra Club, Will Tuttle.